Hey gang, let's face it, you're probably listening to this show and all of your other shows on your phone. Are you tired of filling up your phone with all your favorite podcasts? Well, check it out. You stream your movies, you stream your music, why not stream your podcasts? Try Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is an app that allows you to stream over 5,000 of your favorite shows, including the one you're listening to right now, right to your smartphone or pad. Download it for free at Stitcher.com or find it in your app store. I use it and I absolutely love it. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys today. I have singer-songwriter Ben Balmer. His album, Loose Lips, Sunk Ships, Bruised Hips, and Booze Sips, came out in September, which coincidentally is when I saw him by accident when I went to go see Ali Tadros play. Zuri and I saw him, it was one of those situations where you're like, oh, God, there's an opening guy. I had to get to another show. I knew I had to leave Ali's show early, so I was like, this guy's going to cut into my time with Ali. But, man, what a pleasant surprise. This guy is an amazing songwriter, amazing performer. He really is like a very seasoned professional on the stage playing up there. This guy's fantastic. And then we ended up going to see him a couple weeks ago again at the Whip Inn, where he plays here in Austin every Monday. Go to BenBalmer.com, find out how to get Loose Lips, Sunk Ships, Bruised Hips, and Booze Sips, which just came out. We have a fantastic conversation. Before I get to that, let me tell you, there's some friends of mine are making a movie about the Broken Spoke. It's called Honky Tonk Heaven, the story of the Broken Spoke, and they have a Kickstarter that has less than a week for you to give. November 11th is when the deadline is. So before we talk to Ben Balmer, let's talk to Michelle Ferris, one of the producers on Honky Tonk Heaven. All right, let's get down.
Well, a long time forgotten.
Okay. 20.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. So you guys were able to get so many artists, including Willie Nelson.
Gosh,
Who else? Who else were you able to get that place in? I saw Jesse Dayton on there, a great friend.
Jesse Dayton he's got some great little pearls, man. I love his interviews. Mm-hmm. And he cuts to the chase.
He's a smart, smart man.
He is he's very intelligent.
Yeah. I enjoy him.
Yeah, and I love that he branches out. Plus, I have to say,
I'm another filmmaker.
I'm a huge Rob Zombie fan. Back in the day, I would see White Zombie multiple times. But yeah, Jesse was a great interview. Lucky Tubb, really some beautiful words from him. We've got Alvin Crowe, who basically, Alvin Crowe, if there's a poster child for the Broken Spoke, it is Alvin Crowe. He grew up at the Spoke, and he's really one of those stories of, you know, started so young, and his craft has just... he has honed his craft, and now he's Alvin Crowe.
That's
you
what
know?
A lot of people I noticed say in the Kickstarter movie, which, by the way, you guys have a Kickstarter to finish this film. It's kickstarter.com/brokenspokefilm, and you have until November 11th
to get to it. So yes. If we can get there sooner, that would be fantastic.
Yeah. You can get more by November 11th. You'll be in great shape.
Yeah.
But one of the themes through the thing is that there are people that went there and worked on their craft, worked on their art, James White gave them a stage to work out their things.
Yeah,
to get
good. It's really unbelievable for me, who I've, you know, when I was in high school, George Strait was blowing up. That was his, you know, he was a solo artist at that point. But prior to that, when I was a teenager, he was cutting his teeth with Ace in the Hole on a regular weekly gig at the Broken Spoke. And that's George Strait. I mean, come on. There's no bigger country star.
Right.
And he was there for years playing with Ace in the Hole. And same. Go ahead.
No, no, no. And it's interesting because you're doing this. This ties into what Ace and the Hole must have been doing, was touring around and playing the dance halls around Texas, mm-hmm. the places that were very much like Broken Spoke around the state and around the region.
Right.
Now, in this film, you did pick one that was personal to you guys.
Right.
But do you think that you're making a statement for all of them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and we did get some amazing footage. We worked with a couple of different cinematographers on this project, both with the most beautiful artistic eye.
Do you use Lee Daniels?
We use Lee Daniel, yes. Mm-hmm. And then we also use David Layton. Mm-hmm. And we went out a full day and shot just the exteriors of these dance halls, some that are still open, some that aren't. And it really is a testament. I mean, dance halls back in the day, it was
when
the
are they
hub.
From? Are they're from the 30s?
They're around that time
okay.
period. And some of these were the only meeting places of communities.
Right.
So it's hard for us to imagine seeing the Broken Spoke where it sits now amidst these condos and all this development. But,
right.
you know, the Broken Spoke originally was in a dirt field. There was nothing around it.
Yeah.
And it's survived. It's as a beacon to the community.
Do you know when it was built?
I believe opened? 60, I'm going to get this wrong and I'm going to get scolded big time. 68, I believe.
So it's only as old as me?
That's wrong. It's 50. Well, no, I should do the math because okay. they celebrated 50 years last year.
Okay.
I could have saved myself, but I didn't.
So
yeah.
65.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
64. Okay. 60,
yeah.
Okay.
So you know, it's seen so much, and you know, it's interesting because I was kind of cross-referencing a list of inductees into the Country Music Hall of Fame,
uh-huh.
and I was just looking at the list, kind of interested to see like who was in there,
right?
And it wasn't because I was trying to see who played at the Spoke, but I started going down the list, and I was like, oh my gosh. He's played there. Willie Nelson, yeah. Ray Benson. I mean, like
Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton. There's
George Strait.
Yeah, I mean, all of these people that it's like
and Bob Wills. That's
Bob.
Like, you know,
oh, yeah. That's like
that's
the huge
like the biggest one.
And James actually tells this amazing story about Bob Wills. He, you know, as some people call him James, and some people call him Mr. White. He was very dedicated to booking. Like only the top notch talent of like true blue country music. And he told the guys, hey, I've made a phone call. Bob Wills is going to come in. And the guys there, which this is from James. He's like, you know, all the drunks there were like, yeah, whatever, whatever. And sure enough that night, in through the door walks this big old lumbering yeah. guy with a fiddle under his arm and a big old fat stogie. And it was Bob Wills. And he
yeah.
came in and he played, you know, and it's, you know, I mean, that right there is a story.
Yeah. And I bet there's a lot of hoops to jump through to play there.
Well,
I think about that. Like, you know, I mean, if you're going to be a country artist, like a real country artist, and you live here, you got to go through that system.
Right. It's not
given.
Yeah.
Right?
And another thing that I love is that the Broken Spoke, and Jesse speaks to this in the film, is that you really live and die by the ability to keep people on the dance floor. And it's not about those people that are, you know, the musicians or the bands. It is about their music because people are dancing to it. But if you're getting up there as a band and you're thinking, oh, it's all about me, and it is not.
No, I've seen Jesse. I mean, that's the person I've gone there to see the most.
Yeah. And so you see that. You see people out there on the floor and they may or may not applaud after a song is over because they're getting ready to dance again.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting dynamic. And people that come in to play it, they know what they're getting into. They know that it's an iconic place that they want to play. They want to prove themselves to James and hopefully they get that call to say you're playing the, you know, we'll start you out in the front room.
Yeah.
But Now we're going to move you to the back.
I went through some of the incentives, and like for a couple hundred bucks, you get like the dinner thing and the whole, you know, dance lesson package for you and your friends and stuff. But also you were saying that this is like if you just 20 bucks, if whatever you have to give to this Kickstarter, let's get it going. Cause there's a lot of money you guys have to raise.
It really is.
There's, and you're in the editing phase right now.
We're in the editing phase. So we're doing things like dropping in some of the final, not sequences, but some of the final scenes. We did a late shoot of a really incredibly beautiful scene that I'm not going to give away, but it is incredibly beautiful and heartfelt. And
it includes, it's Jesse Dayton as Lady Godiva.
No, it is that we did. We had him coming in on a steed.
Completely naked.
Yes, completely naked. No, I can tell you right now, Annetta White would not have that.
And you'll get that video for an extra $100.
Yes, you do. Yeah. Actually, I can give you a cut. That's a special reward for anybody who has $1,000 and over. It really is. And I really love this idea of, I can't tell you how many times I encounter people that say, I love the spoke. Oh, I love the spoke. Just wherever, if I'm at the grocery store or in general conversation. Yeah. And so those are the people that we want that audience to say, you know what? Here
Let's
for the cost of a beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, and I want to help, you know, what we're saying is we want to help tell the story of the spoke to the world. It deserves to be told to the world. And you know, and to keep that legacy absolutely going, it's important.
Honky Tonk Heaven, the story of the broken spoke, kickstarter.com/broken spoke film. Get out there, give. There's a lot of incentives. Most of them include you get the movie.
Yeah.
You get it. When it comes out, you don't have to, no fuss, no muss. You get a digital download of the movie.
Yeah.
Watch it on your time.
Yeah.
But I'm very proud of you guys. You've really come a long way. You've worked on this for a long time, and I know that this is not a hugely financial.
No,
the financial windfall of documentary making has not quite made it.
It's
there yet.
No,
the fact is that you guys are making it out of the, you know,
it is
your
out
heart,
of love.
You know?
It's for the love of this music and this tradition.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, definitely of all of you guys, I know Brenda the best, and I've seen her in this. In this world for a long time and supporting all these people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad to see that there's a whole team making this movie.
Yeah.
Get out to kickstarter.com/broken spoke film. Give what you can to Honky Tonk Heaven, the story of the broken spoke, by Wednesday, November 11th. Let's get this movie made. Let's get it out. Sam Douglas Wainwright and Brenda Green Mitchell, directors, and Michelle Ferris as our producer and liaison.
Liaison.
So whenever I have any other questions, I can just call you?
Yes, you can.
I'm going to put your number on this phone, too.
All right. Do it. Please.
Thank you so much for coming.
You're
Everyone
welcome.
Get out there and get involved. This is a very special project. And we got to remember, it's going to be tough to preserve everything that's old as we move into the new. Some things have to change. Some things have to go. But some things need to stay.
Yes, absolutely.
And the broken spoke may very well be one of those things.
We think so.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
All right, you don't have much longer to give to this Kickstarter campaign. That's kickstarter.com/broken spoke film, and it ends on November 11th. That's next week. All right, let's get to my conversation with Ben Ballmer. He came by a month and a half ago, almost 2 months ago. We sat down, had a great conversation, and he actually did something that most guests don't do. Actually, it's only been done a couple of times. He played a song. I asked him to play a song. I love his songs, and I just wanted to see him play a song. So here's my conversation with the incredibly talented Mr. Ben Ballmer. Let's get down.
Ink I saw was on her neck, an anchor that read no regrets. Her granddaddy died in the Second World War when a U-boat put him on the ocean floor. I guess every mark upon her skin is a way to take her back again to a special place within her mind, a catalog where she can always find a friend.
So what was that Austonian show? It's like a series. Ali was telling me.
Yeah, it was the first one that they've tried with that, and I forget, I'm not sure if they've called it a name or something like that, but they but Ali and the Sweetness have stayed over at the Estonian a few times as they've come through town on tour, and they they invited him out and a couple of people from Just Strings.
Yeah,
yeah, they wanted to start a house concert series out there, so it seemed pretty cool.
Well, man, I had no idea who you were, and when I got there, I was just blown away. I was totally blown away. You know, you had this thing that you... How much do you play? You have, like, the thing. You know what I mean? Like, when you get up there, you know how to look at the... Like, I get weirded out. Maybe you were just having a good day. Maybe I caught you on a good day. Maybe I normally you're terrible, but... There was this confidence and just this ability to not overconfident, you know, you were confident enough to stand up there and tell your story and kind of draw people in. You kind of knew all of the tricks of like a street performer almost.
Oh, well, I cut my teeth playing music on the street. That's
you did?
For sure.
Okay,
oh, yeah,
it's good because you have that essence.
Yeah, it's a different thing, you know. Playing on the street, it's, you know, a lot of times you really have to. I mean, you have to play to your audience, obviously, and that means like a song to song thing. So if I see people walking down the street, I mean, I haven't done it in a long time, but you know, I would see people in age groups or demographics and stuff, and decide and change which song I was going to play next, yeah. You know, and I think I got pretty good at it. But then there's another science to it, I think, too, and with that kind of a situation. Because, you know, when you're playing on the street, you know, it's good to be, like, even more impressive rather than expressive. Whereas, like, I think in a listening room setting, it's a lot easier to, you know, the expressive stuff is the thing that really nails it to the wall, I think, a lot
yeah,
of times. You can
yeah.
bring it down and yeah. sing a quiet song, and that's when somebody really, like, you know, connects.
Yeah, there's just that essence of really being able to connect with a group of people.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's easy with house concert stuff too. I mean, people are there because
yeah.
they want to listen
yeah.
and they want to hear somebody new and they want to hear original music, you know. So you don't have to fight the person who's screaming Freebird in the back of a bar, which, you know,
dude,
that's another trick of
dude,
the trade that you got to learn.
I'm in a cover band.
Yeah.
And like we work all the time. I can't tell you how many times a week somebody says that and thinks it's always some douchebag that think like looks at his friends after he says it, or like someone picks up a cowbell.
Yeah,
got more cowbell. Looks like, yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
You ever heard of that? Like, no, dude, I heard it last night in
right.
Houston. Like, there's
yeah.
a guy dressed exactly like you with your same haircut doing
yeah.
a thing. So yeah, those listening room environments are pretty. They're sweet for that sort of thing.
Oh yeah, they're my favorite gigs. I think. I mean, I play gigs all over the country and
all over the world, right? You
yeah.
you had just come back from Europe when I saw you there.
Yeah, I was in Europe for 2 months. I was playing in the UK. I played about 80 gigs in, you know, give or take, I think.
In the UK?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was playing up and down Sussex, up and down the South Downs way, doing a bunch of gigs for charity in England, and then we played the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland.
Wow.
So we were playing every night of the week in Scotland, that's for sure. And I think we just had like 4 days off the whole 2 months, but it was pretty intense. We did a lot of twofers, a couple of threefers, and played some wonderful shows, but we were well received.
How do you handle like a threefer?
Are
there people that came, like, do you have, I mean, obviously when you're on tour, I know, especially even when you're doing it by yourself, you get your sort of like your song that pulls you out when you're losing them.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
the story that sets up that song draws it, like, gets everyone back quiet and like, oh, really? Back, you know, leaning
absolutely,
in their seat, leaning
yeah.
forward. When you do that, you have to do it in front of, I would imagine if you're doing a threefer, there's got to be a couple freaks that come to all three shows.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think it was a little bit easier because I was actually playing with a band called Good Company, which is a band that's based out of Nashville, but it's really kind of a collective of musicians
oh, yeah.
from all over the country.
Yeah, you told me about that.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. And so it's, you know, so there was people from all over the country that were, you know, that were there. There's this wonderful singer-songwriter who's, like, got a voice like Aretha Franklin. I mean, and I'm really not exaggerating at all. She just blows people's minds with R&B soul tunes named Heidi Burson. And, you know, and then there's Mike Willis, who's over there too. It's his group and his kind of brainchild. So I think a lot of times we'd play to the audience depending on our specific styles. So if we go to some spot and it's like Heidi's going to kill it here. You know, we just kind of let her take the reins and we sing backup for her, and vice versa with me and Mike. Sometimes it's, we just kind of all take turns.
What was that movie with all the guys in Scotland and they sang soul? Remember, in the early 90s?
I don't know.
It made me think that everyone in Scotland is just super into like Otis Redding. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what movie.
What's it called? Not The Resentments, the something like that.
I don't know.
Okay, whatever. The Commitments.
Okay. Yeah, I've never heard
of it. Oh, check it out. You like soul music in Scotland, you'll like this movie. So you probably also will be able to understand what they say, because it takes a little while, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
To adjust.
And I thought I had a pretty passable British accent before I came to England, but then I realized that there's so many different ones. That my accent just got confused.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you know, people are like, oh no, that person's from Cornwall, and that person's a Geordie,
right.
And that person's from London, and, you know, people who say London and London.
Yeah, 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 yeah. My friend Shane, guys from Sheffield say London.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was pretty interesting. I ended up hanging out with this awesome comedian, stand-up comedian who was playing a bunch in the Fringe, named Tiff Stevenson.
Uh-huh.
And she's great at impressions and accents and stuff. So she pretty much gave me, I had her read Bukowski and change the accents throughout. it was pretty hilarious.
That's cool. So. Do you have a girlfriend?
Yeah.
Tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, what does she do? She in the biz?
She's a musician, yeah.
Really? Mm-hmm. Did she go on the tour?
No.
With the band?
No. I like to keep that whole kind of thing separate a little bit. You know,
I'm with you.
Yeah.
But I just had like Don and Hawks in here. You know those guys?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've heard of them. I don't know them personally, but.
They're fucking in love, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they're married. They go on tour. I mean, they're just together all the time. I don't know how that happens.
Yeah.
You got to have a life. What's her story?
She's an awesome singer-songwriter here in town.
Okay.
But yeah, she's just got a few different projects, so.
Okay. All right, so your album, Loose Lips, Sunk Ships, Bruised Hips, and Booze Sips.
Yeah.
It's a long, why? Is it a lyric?
Yeah, it is
that
a lyric.
Okay, it went by me. Sorry.
Yeah, I think it was just kind of a lyric that kind of encompassed the message of, or like the thematic elements that were kind of permeating throughout the record.
Yeah.
You know, and I, when I decided on the title, a lot of people said, well, it's kind of a Fiona Apple title, you know, but, you know, very much like When the Pawn
Hits. Oh, yeah,
hits,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's, who cares?
Oh, so do you and your, do you guys go, like, call it Loose Lips?
No, I don't know. Other? It just came out, so okay. I guess we'll see how, you know, how I start calling it.
I'm going to call you in 2 months, and we're going to find out where we're at with the title.
I'll be able to tell you that.
Yeah, what the guy's on. So you recorded this in Martindale?
Yeah, in Martindale,
on the
Texas.
River?
Yep. Yeah, right on the San Marcos River, in Mark Youngers' home studio, who's another awesome singer-songwriter out of San Marcos.
Okay.
And yeah, we worked on it for a while, and we had a Kickstarter to start the whole thing up.
Oh, really?
Yep. And it was very successful, and we raised a lot of money, and finally were able to come out, much later than I was hoping it was going to come out, but hey, that's how it goes.
What were some of your incentives?
It was mostly, you know, I really didn't have, you know, the more prizes and things that you have, I think that
the more you have to do.
Yeah. Well, the more, well, I don't mind. See, the thing is I have time and I'm willing to put in time and effort. But the other thing is that, you know, if you put in vinyl or t-shirts and stuff, that means that you also have to buy vinyl and t-shirts. And, I really wanted to put money into the record and as much money
vinyl?
As I could in that. I don't have vinyl
okay.
yet, but, so most of the incentives were usually performance based. Like, you know, you can get lessons from us, or
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you can get a harmonica lesson from me, or
so you've been playing harmonica a long time.
Yeah, yeah, I have.
What, since you were like 13?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, since I was 13. Okay. Yeah, I got grounded to my room for a month, and I learned how to play the harmonica.
Isn't that weird? I always equate harmonica with jail.
Right. Yeah.
just a guy alone.
Adam Carroll told me that he called it a prison whistle, and that was the first time I ever heard that. I think that's my favorite nickname for the harmonica.
What? Who were you? The people that inspired you on harmonica?
I think Paul Butterfield is a big one.
I saw his name in your bio.
Yeah, blues like guy him. Out of Chicago. Sonny Boy Williamson, the second Rice Miller. He's a wonderful one. Magic Dick of the Jay Giles Band. I mean, yeah, there's so many. Junior Wells.
Wait.
Yeah?
Jay Giles isn't the guy that plays harmonica?
No. He's the guitar player. Magic Dick is the... And he's not even the guy who sings. Peter Wolf is the
guy who
sings.
I know it's Peter Wolf. Yeah. I thought... Okay. So, what did... I don't know any songs of theirs with harmonica in it, but I just know that it's like, what, in the 80s he just stood on the side?
Yeah, I think, well, the 80s were kind of a dark time for them, in my opinion. But you listen to, like, the 70s stuff is all rhythm and blues. It's none of the super 80s out freeze frame stuff. I like the stuff from the 70s that was just straight.
You mean the badass jams?
Right. It was okay. Just, I mean.
Love stinks.
Yeah.
Saying is terrible.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Well, it's all right.
No, hey, man.
Well, I think that when you put them next to the stuff that I really dig, it's
I gotta
like, you know,
get into their. I know about their 70s stuff.
Oh yeah, they did Hard Driving Man, and you know that song, like, bought me a rig down in Texas, took it up to Montreal. I mean, they were just this kicking band. Yeah. James Brown said that they were the only white man that should ever be allowed to dance in public.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Peter Wolf, man, that's classic.
Those
dance
guys
music,
are
man.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. What was going on musically around you when you were like, hey, Paul Butterfield, harmonica? Because you seem like a younger dude. Maybe there was a...
Yeah, I my dad had a pretty extensive record collection, and he bought a record player, and he put it in my room and said, you know, have at it, pretty much. And he had lots and lots of stuff that he had still held on to ever since he was my age or at the time, you know. And so I just started listening to that. I listened to modern music when I was in middle school and high school and stuff. But
which was what? It was indie rock for you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I listened to, you know, I love Pearl Jam and, but I listened to a lot of Ani DiFranco and, you know, just.
You have some pretty fabulous picking stuff and like some really great, like, stuff I can't do with your right hand.
Yeah. Oh, no, thank go ahead. You. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. Well, I'm working on it, you know, getting a little bit better every day, I guess. Yeah, but I listened to all sorts of people. Ani DiFranco was, you know, was a big influence
Elliot
on me
Smith.
Earlier. Yeah, I listened to a lot of Elliot Smith, Tom Waits.
Yeah.
You know, but I also listened to a lot of old school stuff. I was listening to, you know, Aretha Franklin and Otis Redding. And, I mean, those guys were, you know, constantly in my earbuds.
Right. As a songwriter, it seems like you picked up a lot of stuff from Tom Waits.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
You don't do the weird voice thing that some people do. Some people do it. And even he that's not his voice.
Yeah, but I think that he's, well, it is his voice because he's the one who did
right,
it.
Right,
you know?
Right, so like, right. Right. But he's like a character guy.
Yeah, well, sort of. I don't know. It's like, it's almost like
that.
He picks up like a like persona
a,
sort
yeah,
of
yeah,
thing. But
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, he finds a lot of humor in pretty dark stuff. And I kind of appreciate
that
too, a lot.
Yeah.
My songs are mostly about murder or heartbreak. You know.
Are you a guy, this is what I want, there's a lot of words in your songs,
mm-hmm.
and there's, is it a laborious process for you to write a song? Because you got to put a whole thing together, and there's, it's not just like, she left me in, I'm mad at her.
It really just depends.
That might be the best song I ever
yeah,
wrote.
That's
she left
write
me
it down,
in,
yeah.
I'm mad at her.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that it's, you know, it really depends on the song. Sometimes I'll sit on a song for a year and it's just pulling teeth. And then finally it'll click and, you know, and just like that, I'll be able to finish it. And some songs, are just songs that I wrote in 20 minutes, from start to finish, even really lyric heavy ones like, Summer Knees on the record is a song that I'm pretty proud of. And that took me about 25 minutes to write the whole tune. I don't think I made any corrections on it either.
You know, aren't those songs weird? Because you can't find them any. You're like,
yeah, you just got something to say. And the most frustrating ones to write for me are the ones that start out like that, and then they just sort of stop. And so that, you know, you have like that moment of it being really easy, and then you're 2/3 of the way done, and so now you're just really excited about that song, but then the rest of it's pulling teeth. So then you're just, you know,
yeah,
you're just still waiting for it to you know, kind of mature into what it's going to be when it grows up, but then you gotta wait.
Yeah, so. My friend Will Sexton used to talk about that all the time, about having the fucking, like, you sit, you write a verse and a chorus, and you're like, that's it.
Yeah.
So where do I go from here?
Well, I heard Miles Zuniga say one time that he was saying that songs are like children, in that, like, you know, some of them go to college and do really well.
Right.
Of them, like,
was that on this show?
Huh?
Did you hear that on the show?
No, I saw. Okay, but he might say it every once in a while. Yeah. But yeah, and some of them
it's in his Rolodex.
And some of them are drug addicts and steal your TV when you're not looking. So
it's kind of true.
Yeah, absolutely.
How about so you did this record in Martindale? You had guests on there. Got mm-hmm. guys come in and play. Plankenhorn plays a big part in your
absolutely yeah
in your thing.
Yeah, Plank does a whole lot of stuff. He plays dobro and Weisenborn and mandolin and sings and plays the plank, his own instrument.
Yeah.
It was really awesome. And then Guy Forsythe was on it.
He played saw. He's a great saw player.
Oh, it was awesome too. It was exactly what the, you know, you can't have a really creepy murder folk song without a saw, in my opinion. So
what's the murder folk song thing for you? Like, where does that come from? You like those stories?
Yeah. You know, I just like tragedy, you know, those stories attract me, you know, whether it be, you know, Hamlet or Macbeth or, you know, a Tom Waits song, you know, those, or Elliot Smith, you know, those stories that, that just have super sad endings. There's a lot of beauty in that. And so I kind of try to emulate that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How much do you write? Stay on yourself?
It depends. A lot of times when I'm playing a lot, I tend to write a little bit less. But I always usually keep a notepad with me, so I'm at least writing down ideas.
You journaling guy?
Sometimes, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's it. Really,
your songs
just
seem like they come from a guy who journals. That's the truth.
Yeah.
Seems like there's stories you've worked out, and maybe you saw something, you wrote a long thing about it, processed it in your head, and then wrote a song.
Yeah, a lot of times in the mornings I like to wake up and get on my computer, and a lot of times I'll write for an hour, and most of those times they're just stories or stream of thought type things, and mm-hmm. I just put them in a folder and never look at them.
That thing where
again,
you just write the 3 pages or whatever it is?
Yeah, something sort of like that, yeah. But a lot of times I'll just write like a story of what happened to me, you know, recently, and sometimes they're funny and things that I just don't want to forget.
Yeah.
You know? And a lot of times, you know, like when you're on stage, it's nice to have stories that are a little bit rehearsed, you know, so that, you know, most of the time I'm pretty comfortable on stage, but, the rehearsal is really nice because sometimes you're just not feeling it. And so you have to fake it to the audience. And the more rehearsed you are, the easier it is for you to do that, because you can just go on autopilot. So sometimes, hey, I have a fever of 103, and I got to play this. You know, I got to play this gig, and these guys. So, you know,
well, you've been gone for like 7 weeks. You got 1 week left. You're
right.
In a different continent.
Right.
You're hungry. You're cold. You miss your girlfriend.
Right.
You,
right.
You know.
Yeah, and it's and so, you know, you're sick, you're tired, you don't feel like you're funny, but at least you got like a couple of jokes that you can pull out and some stories that you can tell that you know that can connect to your audience a little bit more. Because, you know, you owe it to them. You know, you want to give them a good show, but sometimes it's, you know, just like anybody with any job, sometimes it's hard. So,
yeah. Speaking of any job, do you work any job?
Nope, just music.
Just music?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good job.
It's a really good job, yeah. I'm very poor, but very happy, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get out there and do your own thing. I mean, I'm in a band of people that have always done that, but as the times got harder, we realized, oh, we could get together and sing ABBA songs and play parties.
No, it's it's an interesting journey. You know, I play with those guys out of Nashville quite a bit, and you know, my band grows and shrinks depending on, you know, how much the gig pays a lot of the time, just because, you know, I have to pay my bills and stuff. So a lot of times I'll play as a solo or a duo, and for nicer gigs I'll bring out a 5-piece band and really rock the place out.
I really loved you and the stand-up bass player.
Yeah, that's Janie Cowan. Yeah, I play with her quite a bit. The person on the record is Josh Flowers. He's the guy who I usually collaborate with.
Right.
But yeah, Janie is wonderful. She is always on a bunch of different gigs and playing with a bunch of different people. She's killer. We're just about to go to Key West, actually, at the end of the week.
Oh, for what?
I'm playing at the Hog's Breath for a week over in Key West.
That's the place. How do you get
spot
in a gig there? How do you get
if I told you, I don't know if I can tell you on this, but
Don't tell me on this. Tell me afterwards.
Right, right. No, I think, you know,
like,
actually,
is that the gig where you go stay there and they like give you a bicycle and stuff and you like,
they don't give you a bicycle, they put you up in a house that's walking distance from the gig. I think it's just like any other gig. You just contact them and give them a press packet and, you know,
I just want to go to Key West for a week. But if you do that, I mean, that's how people like us, some of our listeners might not realize that, but like, there's all these different things. Like when I want to hang out with my friend Joseph or Casey, we book like a little tour together. It's almost like a little vacation, but you have to play at night.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And then you know, you go to a place like this for a week and you're basically hanging out in Key West and it's 2 hours. You'd be probably taking a nap or something.
Oh yeah.
Go play a gig.
I've told people that, you know, playing music for a living is, you know, I'm very poor, but I get to do expensive things for free.
It's
a trade off, you know, I get to, a lot of people pay a lot of money to go to Key West for a week and, you know, just hang out and stuff. But I love playing music. Like, what else would I want to do anyways? So, you know, I go there for free and play a bunch of music and make a little money and come back and do the same thing over here. I can't complain.
No, that's great. I'm glad that you're doing that stuff.
Me too.
How often do you get to Europe? Do you just go with the band or on
actually, your... Europe was the first time. It was the first time I've been to Western Europe. I've been to Eastern Europe before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but that was the first time I've been to England or Scotland. It was beautiful out there, and we were very well received. The people were wonderful. I'd love to. If Trump gets elected, I'm probably going to Edinburgh. So
you're not going to stay here and bask in the glory of his greatness?
Yeah, right. No, I'm not going to jump on the train. I'll probably stay. But
what do you mean? It's not a train. That's reality, brother. Right. I don't want to be one of those guys.
Yeah.
Ironically, walking around voting for him. I don't know how we live in this world.
Yeah,
are you a political?
Somewhat. I mean, I think that. I pay attention. I try to keep that stuff immediately. I'm starting to regret making a Trump comment. You know,
well, because no, it's like, I mean, there's guys in your position where this guitar kills fascists. You gotta, you do have a message that you're going around saying.
Yeah, I'm not a super political songwriter. But I come from a pretty mixed background as far as, you know, where I come from and what I believe and I just think that, you know, there's a lot of idiots out there.
Yeah.
And it's usually not the people that that really
you're hanging out with. I don't think there's a lot of idiots that listen to this show.
Well, I'm sure. Well, and most of the people that I hang out with, you know, I mean, people are generally, I think, pretty kind and nice people. But I see a lot of people that are on TV that don't seem to be that way, unfortunately. But maybe you have to get to, maybe in order to get to that position, you just have to be kind of a different kind of person.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you grow up in Detroit?
The Detroit area. I grew up in Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What does that mean, to me?
It's like 15 minutes. Okay. 15 minutes west of Detroit.
Were you playing in the bars there?
Yeah. I played in the bars in Ypsilanti and Ann Arbor and
Ann Arbor's
Detroit.
Great.
Oh yeah.
What's the sandwich place?
Zingerman's. I worked at Zingerman's.
You did?
Yeah. I worked at the mail order. Yeah, and
oh, because people order that stuff to get it sent to them.
Oh yeah, and
that's
it's,
how great
it's awesome.
Zingerman's
they
is.
They got incredible food and the best customer service out there. So if you guys want to go out to check out Zingerman's.com.
Yeah, you pick up a sandwich.
They will mail you a sandwich that will blow your mind, and or olive oil or cheese or whatever you want.
Yeah, that's a great place. So you worked at Zingerman's.
Uh huh.
How long?
I worked there for about 6 years.
In Ann Arbor?
Uh-huh. Yeah, because I went to high school in Ann Arbor.
Okay. Did you go to college?
Nope.
Michigan College?
Nope.
That Michigan College?
Nope. I did some work with the University of Michigan, but with music stuff, but no, I never went to college.
Good. What a great, beautiful town.
It's a wonderful town.
I mean, it's Austin was a college town like that, you know, kind of like Athens and that place. And what's the other place that has Ian's Pizza?
Ian's Pizza.
It's in Wisconsin. What's that place called? Madison.
Oh, Madison, yeah.
Yeah, I know places by the places that I eat. Do you do that? Like, do you go out of your way? Totally. Do you haul ass to get somewhere early so you can eat at this badass Thai place outside of Philadelphia or something?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, there's great spots. Although a lot of them are a lot of times I go to the crazy weird bars. Like in Madison, that reminded me of this place called the Le Tigre Lounge, which is one of David Lynch's favorite bars.
Really?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, the guy is super, everything's just covered in tiger print. They serve like two beers there, and one of them is like a tiger beer, and there's no TV, and it's like one of the only jukeboxes that I've seen that you know, that still have records on it. Yeah, and they still have the 45s, and the bartender will kick you out for swearing, and it's just super strange. I mean, you just,
that's awesome.
Yeah, you might, like, you think that a giant will come out of the back and start speaking backwards to you. It's so like a David Lynch movie. It's awesome.
That's rad. What other places do you go on tour when you're having a good time? When you're going out after a show, where do you go?
A lot of times I just go to the local dives, you know. I mean, my
You
my
do
favorite...
the Claremont Lounge in Atlanta?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I've played Eddie's Attic over there in Decatur. Then we played, I played over at the Apache one time. That was pretty wild.
What's that?
That's just an awesome music venue in Atlanta.
Okay.
But yeah, when I'm on tour, I go through a lot of different spots. We go up to Canada a lot. Canada's a blast. We play up in Perth and Picton and Toronto and stuff, mostly in Ontario. But I played in BC before too.
Yeah. How do you like it? It's great.
Canadians are awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't, I mean, I'm from Michigan, you know, so they're just our neighbors. So yeah, we're pretty similar folk, I think.
On these gigs, do you ever have to play like a rock club? Like a non-listening, because I mean, I've seen you in this one place. I know you play thing. I know you do the thing at Whip Inn, also kind of a listening place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we play all sorts of different places. Yeah, okay. I mean, really anything. And we can play a rockin' crowd, too. I mean, I was just, you know, the listening room is nice for me because as a storyteller, it's nice to be able to bring it down and have a quiet, sing a quiet song where people can really hear the story.
Yeah.
But other times people just want to have a good time, and that's okay too. So we got those songs. We got songs like that. So,
I kind of want you to play a song. Is that weird?
No.
After I told you not to.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you mind doing it with just one mic?
Yeah, sure. As long as it's cool with you.
It's totally cool with me.
All right.
Yeah. You want to grab that guitar?
Yeah.
Yeah. Play me... God, there was one song that I loved so much. I saw you play it live, and when I heard the record, I totally remembered it. Worth.
Yeah, let me...
Is that... You got a tune? Yeah, I do. Hey, this is a great show. I got a capo. And I'm holding, you know what? It's Bale Allen's birthday. Somewhere here. Oh, this is so fun.
Yeah, it's cool.
I'm telling the audience, man. Hey, guys, this is real life. This guy walking around all this fucking gear, reaching in bags.
It's all right,
capo, got it. Okay, so I love your picking, all your different picking styles and all that stuff. Did you get that from Ani DiFranco and like other people like that?
Oh, it's like kind of faking some of Ani DiFranco's stuff. I'm not, I mean, I appreciate that, but I don't know. Maybe it's just the better you get, the more you feel like you're, like the more you feel like you have to learn, which is definitely true. Cool. Well, yeah. You want to just go for it?
Yeah, here, maybe I'll point this one down like a little bit more for your voice.
Sure.
All right. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, she's a wild one. Yeah, she convinced herself of that. She's just pages of a magazine, torn out for scrap. She'll race you anywhere, just as long as she comes first. But she'll only take the love she thinks she's worth. Yeah, she'd be my Huckleberry, with a pistol in each hand. Quote passages from books I'll probably never understand. She'll stone me till I'm bloody, till my heart's about to burst. But she'll only take the love she thinks she's worth.
Yeah, she'll only take the love she thinks she's worth. Just give it up. Yeah, yeah, just a little bit. It's not the burden that you think it is. She's a rolling stone. Yeah, she's a lover and a tease. She's that paralyzing feeling that you get before you sneeze. She'll make a castle crumble just to hear stones hit the earth. But she'll only take the love she thinks she's worth. Yeah, she'll only take the love she thinks she's worth. But just give it up. Yeah, just a little bit. It's not the burden that you think it is. Well, I'm a spyglass to the fissure in her throat. I'm the space between the words she thought before she got them wrote. It's a holy blessed thing to see her smile at a curse. But she'll only take the love she thinks she's worth. Yeah, she'll only take the love she thinks she's worth. But just give it up. Yeah, yeah, just a little bit. It's not the burden that you think it is. Well, don't you be afraid. Just push that stone away. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just give it up. Yeah, just a little bit. It's not the burden that you think. Wild one, yeah, she convinced herself of that. She's just pages of a magazine torn out for scrap. She'll race you anywhere just as long as she comes first. But she'll only take the love she thinks she's worth. Yeah, she'll only take the love she thinks she's worth.
What a great song, man.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so that's good. So I'd you play a song. I'm still going to play the songs from your record. Oh, hey. So talk about that song. I think you talked about it live at the show.
Yeah, yeah. It's a song I wrote with Jeff Plankenhorn.
Oh.
It was actually, that was one of those songs that I was talking about earlier. The you know, you get 80% of it done, and then it starts killing you a little bit.
Right.
Because you couldn't get the, I needed a bridge, and I hollered at Plank, and I went over to his place and hung out for a little bit. We just cranked it out. So, and I got to write a song with Plankenhorn. So that's killer. It's an honor in itself. So
yeah, it is an honor, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, great song. Tell me about the song "Whim."
Yeah,
right?
"Whim."
Yeah, that you did with Ali. Did you guys write that together?
Yes, we did. Yeah, it was. I had started writing. I just started writing it when I lived in this little trailer with no electricity in the parking lot of a apartment complex here in Austin. And
like by choice?
Yeah. Well, okay. When I couldn't support myself playing music, I realized that having a job was kind of getting into me doing better at music too. I mean, you know,
it's a delicate balance.
Yeah, when you're working 40 hours a week, it's hard to go home and write a song. You know, you're tired and you just you know, I just want to go home and watch a movie or have a beer with my friends and stuff. I felt like my artistic side was not being cultivated at all. And you know, your schedule's full. So it's, you know, so when somebody says, hey, can you come out and play a gig with me in Dallas tomorrow?
I can't.
I got to work.
Yeah.
So I quit my job and got a little trailer and lived in secret. Because the apartment complex didn't know I was living in it.
All right.
And so I just lived there for about a year, where I was just writing a ton of songs. I was very prolific, and I read a lot and wrote a lot.
Sometimes it's that kind of stuff that kind of like
fire under your ass, like, yeah, I'm gonna get these songs going.
Well, and that's all that I had to do. You know, I didn't have electricity. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't watch movies or get on the internet or anything like that. So it was, I just read and wrote and practiced. And so, and it was all by candlelight too. You know, it was, 'cause I didn't have any electricity. So it was just, I just light
it's
a bunch cool, of candles.
Though, yeah, romantic.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. It was a really cozy little spot. And so at one point, I just started writing, my first duet. And then I brought it to Allie cause Allie was in town at the time and she was looking for a place to crash. And, I told her that it was, she's more than welcome to stay over at my place, but I was like, well, you know, but I will warn you, this is not the Ritz. But now she came over and we just, you know, fleshed out a bunch of the song and we were almost done with it. And then, we met up again when we were playing a music festival up in Niagara Falls, Canada. And we finished the song in front of Lake Ontario. And
it's a great song. People could see it. There's a video, too, you guys made for it.
Yeah, yeah. There's
it's called Whim. You can find it on your Bandcamp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can find it at my website as well at benbalmer.com. And I'm really proud of that video. It turned out so well.
Yeah. Yeah, she's great. I had her in here the day after I saw you. That's why I'd never seen her before. I'd heard her stuff, and I knew her. We have a couple of mutual friends.
Yeah, she's fantastic. She's such a talented writer.
I want to talk about the recording of that song. It was recorded in a place that I used to live.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I lived in the Congress House.
Oh, okay. Did you live in the trailer?
No.
Okay.
No, Mark knew I lived there. I I paid him rent, and I lived in a room. I think it's an office now.
Okay.
But it was, they kind of needed a dude there to be there sleeping at night.
Right.
And, you know, keep the place safe. And then I needed a place to live that wasn't very expensive. And Mark is like my mentor.
Oh, he's
like
amazing.
My guy.
Yeah.
Like I met him when I was 13 and he took me under his wing and.
Yeah. He mastered this record too.
Yeah. 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 I saw that.
Yeah. He's incredible.
Yeah. How did you meet him?
Actually I met him first through Cole Hansen. Who's a musician.
Guitar guy?
No, she's a girl. She's a talented singer-songwriter.
But isn't that guy Cole Hansen? Isn't there a dude named Cole Hansen?
I don't know. But this is Cole with a K.
Okay, okay.
I don't know. That's
Yeah, I think he's Cole with a C. Okay, so Cole Hansen.
Yeah, so Cole Hansen, several years ago, I went on tour with her, but she came out with we recorded just a little six-track EP with her and with Mark Hallman and Josh Flowers as well, and Douglas J. Boyd, who plays a lot with Allie, who played with her in The Sweetness.
Okay.
So that was the first time I met him. And then I was playing with this band called These Fine Moments, who plays here in town. And I was a side guy for them for a little while.
What do you do when you're a side guy?
I play guitar and harmonica and sing backup.
Okay.
Just kind of the utility.
Kind of like Mark.
Yeah, utility guy. Yeah. You know. And then I went and I recorded, I think, two records with them in Congress House Studios. And and this one I hollered at him about mastering because I know he does such a great job with everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. He puts out some wonderful products and I love working with him. It's a beautiful studio too.
Yeah. You know, there's a documentary they're making about him.
Really?
It's Lady Rain Perry. Yeah, I was in it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I saw a preview of it, and what I'm saying it is just absolutely terrible. Like, I drop F-bombs. Like, I say fuck, like, four times, and just, like, the three sentences that I say in the
That's
whole
really
thing.
Funny.
Yeah. he's a pretty monumental dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he really, he certainly knows his stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's weird when you do it every day that long, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, shit, I'm going to be like, I'm 46. And I met that guy when I was 13. He was touring with Dan Fogelberg and producing Carol King records.
Yeah.
And, I mean, way back then.
Yeah.
Imagine how good you are now.
Well, and it seems like, I think probably my favorite thing about working with Mark is that he's so fast. You know, there's no wasted time in the studio.
Oh, really?
It's just, he's got such a great ear. So when you're recording something with him and you have a great take, but there's one spot where you're just not sure about. You know, at the end of the take, you know, a lot of times you go back into the studio, you listen to the whole track and stuff, and then you say, oh, yeah, that part, you know. But then with Mark, I feel like I haven't even left the studio. I say, hey, I think there was one spot, and he's like, is it this one? And he's already got it queued up. He has already marked it down. He's listening the whole time. He's just, super efficient, fast guy.
Yeah. Also, sexually. No. No, I'm just joking. He's my friend. I can say it. No, he's an amazing, amazing dude. And a very also the hang. Like if you got to be locked in a room with a guy.
Oh, yeah. He's a good
for
dude.
For a couple weeks making a record. Mm-hmm. That's a great guy to get locked in a room with.
Absolutely. Really easy going. Easy to work with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your first record, Dug In, mm-hmm. that came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
You toured behind that. Where did you do that one?
I did it at the same spot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Martindale?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then we toured all over the country with that. We've been tons and tons of spots for that. Yeah, kind of you name it. At least in the northern, in North America.
And so what do you got going on this fall? Like, say, from middle of October on?
Well, I'm booking a tour right now that will be going into a lot of the Midwest and the Southeast.
Okay.
So we'll be playing in North and South Carolina and Virginia, probably playing again in Florida, doing some stuff in Tennessee, Ohio, Indiana, Chicago. We'll be in Michigan, of course, and probably into Canada as well. So.
What was it? Dingermans?
Zingermans.
Zingermans.
Dingermans.
Yeah.
Dingermans.
Yeah. Zingermans. I was going to tie that in somehow, but I couldn't. Look. BenBalmer.com. You can go there and find out all the stuff. You can get the records there, or you can find the links to the records. It's on Bandcamp. It's on iTunes.
Absolutely.
Physical copies available at
BenBalmer.com.
Okay. Yeah. Also, everything just BenBalmer.com. Just go there.
Just
find
go
out
there.
Dave.
Yeah.
You're gonna you won't be around for those whip-in things, but when you're in town, you do a whip-in.
Yeah, I do.
Mondays.
I play at the Whip-In every Monday, and I'll be gone for the next 2 weeks, but then I'm back.
This doesn't come out for a while, so.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, yeah. But I'm, come and see me at the Whip-In.
Okay, when you do the Whip-In, what do you do? Is it a special show? You know how, like, Bob Schneider at the Monday Night Show, you're not going to see him do that if you go see him at House of Blues. And
right,
pay,
right.
Like, you know, $30 for a ticket, you're not going to see some guy try out a song that nobody's ever heard before. You know, the band.
Yeah, it's, the Whip-In's really cool. There's a lot of people who come out that are just, that are just been fans with me of mine for a long time, and it's a good spot. I mean, the Whip-In has amazing beer and food, and totally good hang. And a lot of times I bring in special guests.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. I didn't know if, like, say someone's in the audience, like a Plankenhorn, you're like, hey, come on up here.
Oh yeah, totally like that. And especially a lot of times the band will change too, because if Josh or somebody's out of town, rather than get a sub, a lot of times I'll just get another singer-songwriter and do a song swap or something. It's different every week.
I like you, man.
I like you too, man.
I like the way that I found out about you. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't, like, there was no hype. There was nobody said, like, oh, you got to get this guy. You didn't send me some weird drunk email at 3 a.m. going, like, you know who's super interesting? Me. And I do get those a lot. I just kind of, like, was there to see somebody else and found out that someone was going to play. And I was gearing up to go to that big Flanagan show.
Oh, yeah.
That night. Mm-hmm. And so I was stoked when Allie was like, oh, yeah, my show's sick. I'm like, awesome. Just down the street right before it. Perfect. And then, like, my girlfriend was like, oh, I'm really hungry. I was like, don't worry. We'll go to this thing. We'll go get something to eat. And then we'll go. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, there's another guy playing. I'm like, you're kidding me. It's like, you know, I mean, you've been in this situation.
Oh, yeah,
like,
totally.
Dude, I came just to walk in, see this girl, as many songs as I can. We got to go eat and go see this show. It's going to be a long night.
Yeah.
And then you came on, and we were both like, wow, this guy's fucking awesome. And then I was just really glad that I got to see you and then invite you to be on the show.
Well,
afterwards.
I am too. I'm so happy to be here. I really appreciate you letting me on, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Letting you on? I invited you on.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, I don't ever have anyone play. I had someone once sing a song on the piano because they really wanted to. But you, like, I was like, you know what? I would like you to sing a song to me right now, just you and me.
And what was your name again?
Chris. There's a guy named Chris that's been here the whole time. He has not messed up anything. In fact, in my frantic search for the capo, he was there with me.
Yeah, he's actually just been cleaning. He just, you know,
he's been through my things.
He's been cleaning your stuff.
He's just going through my things in my internet history.
Right. He's just looked up your browser history, and now we're going to blackmail you.
Do you... Do you're on Twitter?
Uh-huh.
Are you on Instagram?
Yep, I'm on Instagram. Okay. I'm on Twitter.
You're on Facebook?
Uh-huh.
Are you on them? Or is this, because you're a guy that will live in a place with no electricity and live by candlelight. Obviously, you're not a dude as into his phone as Chris has been the whole time he's been here.
Well, no, I've been working on it. I mean, certainly I'm very active on the Facebook stuff. I'm trying to do more with Twitter. But I've actually just started working with this company, Louder Than Digital, who's been, kind of trying to take the reins of a lot of my social media stuff.
See, that kind of stuff, though, that then to me is like I'll follow, when it came out, it's something to do. And then once you could do it on your phone, pooping, super awesome. It's like, you can relax. There's stuff to do wherever you are. And I follow stuff, and I'll follow people on Twitter that I really like. Like, oh, I like this dude. But then I'll realize it's not...
Oh, it's not that
it's
person?
It's not actually Paul McCartney that ate that lunch.
Right. No, I mean, and I don't think it's like that. I think it's more like they're going to get on me about...
Okay.
You know, helping me as, like, kind of my mentors into the internet.
It's an interesting... it's a whole other job.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's, sometimes people just aren't, I think I'm good at the music thing. I'm good at the people thing.
Right, exactly.
But it's, sometimes the internet thing is difficult for me. So.
It does feel weird constantly. Hey, I'm over here. Hey, yeah.
The one thing I will say, though, is that I am very accessible, people email me and contact me through the website all the time. And, I always try to make sure that people have a good time and can ask me questions all that
and
stuff.
And you are great. I will say I approached you and you didn't know who I was. Did you?
Nope. No, I did not.
So you were really nice.
Seemed like a nice dude though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now what do you think?
I still seem like a nice guy, man.
Everyone get out there, check out BenBalmer.com. His album, sorry, I got to read it, Loose Lips, Sink Ships, Bruised Hips, and Booze Sips is out now. Mm-hmm. You can find it, just go to BenBalmer.com. You can get a physical, you can get a download. You can also pick up his last album, Dug In, and also the single that he did with our friend Ali Tadros, produced by our friend Mark Hallman, the song Whim. You know, Mark is the guy that interviewed me for this show.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he was hilarious. He was imitating me and saying all the things I say on the show.
That's really funny.
Yeah. Anything else? Anything I'm missing?
No, I think that's it. Thanks so much for having me.
Dude, thanks for coming on. Thanks for playing the song, too.
My pleasure.
All right.
Showed an ace of spades, said she got it after winning in a card game. It was the first time she ever got a little bit of cash, bought her very first car and crashed.
Oh, yeah, that's Ben Balmer. His album, Loose Lips, Sink Ships, Bruise Hips, Booze Ships, is out. Now you can find it at BenBalmer.com or go to iTunes or Bandcamp. You can find him on Facebook and Twitter. Ben Balmer, fantastic dude, doing those Mondays at the Whip Inn. Look for it. His song Whim that he did with Ali Tadros, fantastic song. You can find that on Bandcamp as well. Just go to BenBalmer.com for all your Ben Balmer needs and get involved while you're out there doing that. Don't forget that you can like our Facebook page. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Thank you so much for hanging out. I want to thank Ben for playing the song and hanging out and talking to me. Great guy. Great artist, man. I suggest going out and see him. I wasn't joking. I thought he was amazing when I saw him play. Told great stories. Really engaging. Fantastic artist. You can tell he's spent some time on stage doing that. Pick up his album, Loose Lips, Sunk Ships, Bruised Hips, and Booze Ships, which is available. Just go to BenBalmer.com, all right? Let's hear some more music from that album now. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day, whatever you're doing, all right? Thanks for listening. Let's get down.
I remember the two dimples in the small of her back as she walked away from me across those railroad tracks. Her boots did crunch and sink in the rocks around the wood, while mine just stayed rooted to the spot to which I stood. I tried to be a strong man, I tried to be the one she could go to with a problem. I tried to be her gun, she'd load me with an instinct and pull my hammer back, squeeze along my trigger and I'd fire with a crack. Oh, oh, oh.
summer knees. Come back, please. Take me home, Petoskey stones. Summer knees, help me, please. If you can, Lake Michigan. Well, I think it was my fear, I guess it was my pain, that pulled her even closer. I was meant to entertain each clever little notion in her ocean that I took. Spun around and finally found a little nest inside her book. But the water kept on spinning, yeah, she left me all alone. Caught soaking up a beach made of smooth Petoskey stones. I built myself a home here made of better days and rum. And I forget about this tempest that leaves in my ears this hum, hum, hum. Summer knees, come back, please. Take me home, Petoskey stones. Summer knees, well, help me, please. If you can, Lake Michigan. They say a man who lost his hand can still feel his fingers move. It's a surprise every time when he goes to reach a tool. Does that mean she was a part of me, a limb just like my hand, severed from my body but my brain can't understand? I think that must be it, that must be the reason why I can't fix this with a hammer or cut it out with a knife. You can't mend a thing that's absent, you just wish that it was back while you buckle at your knees thinking about railroad tracks. Oh, oh, oh. Summer knees, come back, please. Take me home, Petoskey stones. Summer knees, help me, please. If you can, Lake Michigan. Summer knees, come back, please. And take me home, Petoskey. Summer knees, help me please, if you can.